Can we please be seated for the next session? So a couple of practical things. We have all the name cards are now ready to be picked up, so you can pick them up here in the back if you haven't done so. You can pick them up at lunch or something, or whenever you get some more coffee. We also need to decide around lunchtime what to do with the potential evening session of today. We have the ability to for people to have some group meetings, including working in this room, to make it possible to have remote participation. If it is the case that we feel that is needed, then we should decide on what those groups should talk about. Some of us, including myself, do have other commitments. So, for example, I cannot be present tonight, but we should be able to have informal sessions. I also heard people talk about interest of trying to gather to have an informal dinner together. That is, of course, something that I encourage people to socialize with each other. If we have anyone being interested in holding the token or trying to arrange a dinner, please announce yourself to the other ICG members, and we can try to see what we can do regarding arrangement of that. So let's go back to talk about that around the when we gather after lunch. We can decide how to do with the evening session. So with that, let's move to the next item on the agenda, the protocol parameters proposal. So, Jari, let's start with you going through the your view of the current situation. Thank you.
Thanks. So, in a while on the agenda, we have 2 hours, and so I'll just speak for 1.5 hours, and then... not really. I have something very short, I think, in just going through the summary and the assessment versions and touch upon a couple of the issues, and then we can open it up for discussion. I think the crucial item, of course, is if the ICG wants to ask or say something to the ITF, or if we are going, we're comfortable with going ahead as planned. So I think most of you have seen this, but just to summarize the ITF process that we went through, we used the normal processes. So we created a working group. We had a proposal that went through adoption stage, had discussion in the working group. We had a working group last call. We had an ITF last call. And finally, the IESC approved the document, as we do with all the other things at the ITF. And the process indeed went through. For most parts, I think there was very broad agreement or even unanimous opinion. On a couple of aspects, there was more debate and rough consensus. The areas that we had those debates on, and I think those were, for instance, the whether we should specify exact contract language in the proposal or just leave that you know, provide guidance and then leave that to the negotiating entities, the role of IANA.org, and whether we had enough statements of justification from the chairs of the working group. All of those things had been raised multiple times. So when you see some of these comments come up to the ICG or our forums, just keep in mind that we've seen it many times during the discussion. And in fact, it was also considered by the ISC as we approved the document. So In the end, there was agreement or decision by the IESG that we have rough consensus on this topic and we can move forward. So that's roughly the high-level story. And we've been working on assessments, Milton, myself, Jean-Jacques, and there's by now actually 4 separate assessment versions in the document repository. Because I just sent one update a few moments ago, feeling that after Milton's assessment, I felt that we needed, or I needed to update my original one at least. So, and we had some discussion on whether there's one assessment or multiple. And I think the answer that we heard from the mailing list was that we have multiple. Although I'm hoping that we could actually find agreement with Milton and JJ about the update during these 2 days, I'm certainly willing to work for that. Hopefully the one that I provided is a little bit closer to that. But again, the important question is whether the ICG is asking or commanding the IETF to do something. You know, please clarify this or something along those lines. And for that, I think the assessments are not really, I mean, they are key, but it's still the ICT decision to say whether we're comfortable as is or we're asking something extra. I did want to go through a couple of the issues that we discussed in the assessments and also during the process. The first one is inclusiveness or openness. And I don't want to go too much into depth in that. I'll just observe that we did talk about that on the list and that we have to be sort of careful in setting any expectations for the openness and inclusiveness. And one of the principles that we at least operate on at the IETF is that we have to be, in some sense, fair and look at the overall community opinion rather than raise any particular aspects of that. But I think we had that discussion on the list. If you think we need to pursue it further, just raise it here as a comment later. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is contracts and negotiation, because that's been like one of the discussion items during the IETF process. How do we do this? And we came up with a conclusion. But since then, there's also been some questions in the ICG and elsewhere. And so the proposal that the IETF sent us has some items that the working group believed are necessary to be negotiated. Basically, that the data in the INA system needs to be in public domain, and also that there needs to be a smooth transition in case of operator change, and that maybe sets some requirements for the current operator, at any particular time, current operator to be able to promise and contract for that kind of service as well. And there may be additional ones. I think the bodies responsible for these types of negotiation in the IETF are reviewing and updating contracts every year, and we do get some input on, we have some own ideas as well as get some additional input elsewhere about things that need to be resolved. But the working group believed that those two things were the ones that needed to be set aside in future contracts. And the working group opinion was that, you know, for those two things, the specific negotiations and the detailed language is in the administrative committee of the IETF and in the domain of our legal counsel. And of course, obviously, when we're talking about agreements, as of now, we cannot make agreements on our own with other people. Those other people have to agree as well, for better or worse. So subject to agreement when we are negotiating with other parties. So at this point, we have the guidance from the working group. We have several additional pieces of feedback from Milton and others. The IOC, the Administrative Committee, has taken that input and is working on this matter. For some aspects of that, we can actually proceed now, and we do that as a matter of our normal business. Like around this time of the year, we are updating our usual SLA with ICANN for INA services, and we're doing that right now. For some other aspects, it might not be so easy. For instance, the U.S. government might be able to say some things at this point, and some other things they will not be able to say until they make a decision on their whole transition system. And I don't know how much you guys know about the IAOC. I just wanted to briefly introduce what the IAOC is. It's a committee of the IETF, just like the IESG, which is the steering group deciding on document approvals, or the IAB. It's mostly NOMCOM-selected body of individuals from the IETF. Also has the IETF chair and IAB chair as ex officio members, so Russ and I are members of that. In addition, it has members nominated by the IESG, IAB, and ISOC board as representatives. So it's a community board with a few additional members. They work with the IETF Legal Council and various other people and entities as needed on a case-by-case basis. And that's roughly what I had to say. So the two items were indeed inclusiveness and openness, and the important thing ahead of us is, you know, maybe not to rehash all discussions that we had already in the IETF, but decide how we, the ICG, are going ahead in this matter, and of course the other matters with other communities. I don't know, Russ, do you want to say something additional? Did I forget anything?
No, I think you covered it.
Okay, so I think I'll leave it at that and open it up for...
But you didn't talk for an hour and a half yet.
Yeah, sorry. I can talk about something else maybe. Skiing.
So, Jean-Jacques?
Thank you, Patrick. This is Jean-Jacques. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. A remark and a question. The remark is... I'd like to thank Yari for initiating this draft and to Milton for very substantial additions. My own part was very minimal. But my question is as follows. Looking at the result, which is very thorough, extremely detailed, I was wondering what impression this would give to the communities we represent, because it's long and detailed. I understand that it can be useful to point out without any ambiguity all the care which went into making sure that proper consultation was conducted, etc. But the tone of it, now that I'm looking at it again, is very self-justifying and almost defensive. You know, we went into this and we did all the right stuff at IETF and IAB and all that. I didn't expect when we started out that it would be so detailed and almost self-justifying. So my question is, am I alone in having that impression, or do people... So does anyone share this concern about appearance? Thank you.
Do you want to respond to that immediately?
Yeah, maybe I can. I mean, I certainly myself, I mean, and it's just me talking now, feel maybe a little bit similar as you do. I think the broad task that the ICG has is to say, you know, we looked at your process and, you know, you did what your process required, and we're moving on, rather than go into like detailed recalculation of the arguments that were held earlier. So in some sense, a shorter response is, you know, maybe more useful, although I understand the need for, you know, us to perhaps show that we had done our homework at the ICG, and we've looked at all the different issues, and we didn't just stamp an approval.
Thank you. I have Michael, Cavus, Alyssa, and Daniel. So, Michael.
Thank you, Michael Nebo. Thank you, Yari, for this explanation, and I think detail is no harm there. My remarks are regarding the questions under three, proposed post-transition oversight and accountability arrangements. One is just for clarification, because you have already relations with ICANN in a formal manner, but just for, because it's been discussed in other contexts and will be discussed in other contexts, which is the legal personality that will do these contractual relations, just for the record. The other issue I wanted to mention is, when you say, however, in the absence of the NTIA contract, a few new arrangements may be needed. Now, the may is the thing that I'm questioning. Are you not convinced? Will you see that? Or what is the may significant? The third and last element is, when you say, when it is the preference of the ITF community that as part of the NTIA transition, ICANN acknowledges that it will carry out the obligations established under and so on and so forth of the current IANA functions contract between ICANN and the NTIA to achieve a smooth transition to subsequent operators. Now, is it the conviction of the ITF that such an acknowledgement is legally sufficient? That was all.
Yari?
Okay, so I'll try to do the first two, and then Russ volunteered to answer the third one. So the legal entity, largely in any ITF matter where we contract for, you know, meeting space or whatever, is ISOC. Although, of course, we also want formally recognize that the IAB and IAC, for instance, in IANA type matters are behind, or the ITF is behind the agreement as well. Regarding the May, and there was some amount of debate about this in the working group, and this is what they wanted to put in. It could have been a different word as well, obviously, and for many other things it could have been slightly different, but this is what they felt was appropriate level of requirement.
And Russ?
So regarding the third point is actually related to the first point. The transition, we wanted to have ICANN commit that they would assist in a transition if at some point there was a decision to go to a different operator for the protocol parameters registries. The document we have in place today is an MOU that was signed more than 15 years ago, and we have an SLA that's signed annually. So that seemed to be the plate. We didn't want to open up the old document, so we wanted to put it into the SLA. And that is signed each year by ICANN and by the IETF's administrative director. So given that the IETF is not a legal entity is in the first right, this seemed like as good of a solution as we could get to that problem.
Kavus?
Thank you very much. Sorry, my question is in a way that I see it to be raised. I request to clarify, does NTIA today exercise any sort of oversight or stewardship in regard with the activities of IETF? If the answer is yes, what are those? And what will happen after the transition? So I have three questions. I take it one by one because sometimes it may be difficult to remember all questions. Is it possible to answer this question? Thank you. And I have two more questions. Thank you.
And thank you for accommodating for my limited short-term memory. So from my perspective, the oversight and the stewardship that the NTIA has had for us in this case has been mostly about the ability of them to stand back and let the communities grow and be able to develop the mechanisms that are needed to deal with all the necessary tasks by themselves. And that is indeed what has happened. So I thank the NTIA for their cleverness to allow this to happen. And today there are no tasks that they perform for us. In theory, they perhaps could, but everything that is being done today is handled by the ITF and ICANN as part of our normal business. And so the oversight is completely today already on our side.
Caboose?
Yes, the answer is what you have given me before, that currently there is no oversight to be done by NTIA. If there is such a sort of oversight and accountability, it is inside the ETF and IAB. That is what I understood, and you confirmed that. There is no oversight required, and after transition, nothing will happen, and no more action is required. Now, the question is that, in order to be sure that everything is perfectly done, do you have any procedure for any review and redress currently? And if yes, how it works? And then this question after that, after the redress and the review and redress, what the decision would be? That decision would be mandatory, or decision would be optional, that if there is any request for redress, be mandatory or would be optional? Thank you.
So we're not entirely sure if we understand the question completely, but there is constant tracking of operations going on between ICANN/IANA and IETF, in fact in both directions, that we they provide a review of things that we ask them to do and point out issues in those requests, if there are any. We from the ITF side are tracking the behavior and performance of IANA, and we're doing that at a very detailed level, both at the level of request as well as overall statistics, and we're very happy with the performance in the last several years. But the answer is that there is review, and there's also review of the overall situation periodically with IAOC, such as updating the SLAs as well as the IAB. Does that answer your question?
Yes, you answered my questions. That I just raised my last question is that, do you see any sort of the empowering the community to have more direct arrangements in order to revert or to modify or override the decision is taken? Have you foreseen any empowering of the community in future after the transitions? Because still we have NTIA, that if there is a necessity, it comes in. But when NTIA is not out, does the community is foreseen to have a sort of the empowerment to come in and to take action if necessary? Thank you.
That's a good question. So the IETF community is in charge of deciding what the policies are. So our community makes the decisions regarding what allocations are actually made, and IANA executes those decisions. That is really what's happening. So the community is already completely empowered to do that part of it. In addition, there's of course the question of whether the overall arrangement needs to evolve in some way in the future, and the IETF is in a position, I believe, to make suggestions and decisions regarding how that should evolve in going forward, and you know, up to and including changing the operator if that should ever be necessary. And the service that we have gotten from IANA has been so excellent that I don't think that's really conceivable at this point. But everything is basically in the hands of the community and IETF to decide. So I think the empowerment is there.
Thank you very much, Daniel. And then Milton, and I put myself in the queue.
Okay, maybe before I make my own comment, I might have a go at trying to have you, Cavus, and you communicate a little bit better. I think what I heard Cavus ask is, what are the mechanisms to correct the situation where the IANA function operator doesn't do what the IETF wants? Is that what, in essence, yeah. So can you answer that question?
Right, so we have this, you know, daily operational or almost daily operational interaction where we can take up issues, and you know, occasionally there are some issues, and we deal with that. And if that were not to be sufficient, then we can take the matter higher up, you know, all the way to the relevant boards, and ICANN board in this case, or if there's a dispute between the IAB/ISG and ICANN board, and deal with the issue at that level. The MOU actually sets the IAB as the ultimate authority in case of a dispute. So if the IETF and ICANN do not agree, then IAB decides. And even going beyond that, if even that is not enough, then both sides have the ability to say no to the contract and walk away with a 6 months notice. So those are the mechanisms. Of course, the you know, more blunt tools are really extremely blunt and would only be used in emergencies, and I don't see the need for them in the foreseeable future. But we do this daily thing all the time.
So now for my own comment, and this is in part a reaction to what Jean-Jacques was saying. I've been participating in the IETF in the past. I've been involved with the Internet Society, who is the legal body behind the IETF. So I have some knowledge about how it operates. The proposal we have received from the IETF and the process that led to it, in my view, are absolutely consistent with the IETF's culture, with its bottom-up governance procedures, and I think both the content and the process are fully acceptable. I propose that we as the ICG thank the IETF for their proposal and come to consensus that it meets all the criteria, and that we will take it into our process as we have received it, and that we ask no further questions about it.
Milton?
We will be asking questions about it, Daniel. I'm sorry. That's not going to fly. It's not that there's anything seriously wrong with this proposal, but this is just not what we can do. We cannot be a rubber stamp that doesn't even care about how these things work, whether they are consistent with the other proposals. I have a tremendous respect for the IETF and for its culture and its processes, but I think the fundamental philosophical disagreement here is that this is an ICG process. It's our RFP. We have to give the proposal to the NTIA. If we wanted bilateral negotiations between the IETF and the NTIA, that would be a different question. So let's not, you know, we don't have to be so precipitous or preemptive in our approach to this, because there's no fundamental problem with the IETF proposal. It's just some simple questions about completeness, about what it means, about how it translates into the overall process that we're running. We just need to engage with those and not try to shut down discussion of that. We can solve these problems. They're not big problems. So let me just make the comments I was going to make. I'm kind of reacting to Daniel here. First of all, Jari, in terms of your response to Kavus's question, I think you should have been a little clearer that the NTIA has never had any authority over the IETF, and it is not standing back from using that authority. As far as I know, it has never had any authority over the IETF. It has had authority over ICANN, and because you are interdependent with ICANN, there was a strange period around 2000 when the IETF approached NTIA and said, wait a minute, guys, you've just established this structure, and you really have to figure out how we relate to it. And that's where we get to RFC 2826. Now, Russ said, take your time, there's going to be a lot of stuff to answer. Russ said the IETF did not want to open up 2826, and I think that was one of the issues with this this whole proceeding, was that there seemed to be a group that had decided in advance that they didn't want to open up 2826, and there was another group that couldn't understand why. So an explanation as to why you didn't want to open that up, why it would not be advisable to make that simply more legally solid, this is the problem you're kind of running into now. For example, I have to totally agree with Mr. Niebel. This word may is very bothersome. You know, we're making a proposal here. Either you're going to do something or you're not. We'd like to know that you're going to do something. Why would you put a word like new arrangements may be needed? What are the conditions under which they would be needed or would not be needed? Again, these are minor tweaks to the proposal, but some of us have trouble understanding why you wouldn't just answer that. And also the jurisdiction.
Milton, can I respond to some of that before I forget what you asked about?
Okay, all right, go ahead.
Sorry. So the NTIA authority, just for the record, no IETF document has ever recognized NTIA as having any particular role. If that helps people understand the situation, then hopefully that's a good answer. The May part, I understand that was one of the things that caused the working group to have a discussion, but this is what this is what the community decided, right? So this is where the community was. And we could argue about that, whether that was exactly right or wrong, but we're here I think to recognize the role of the communities also in this, and I don't think you or the ICG can really override what the community does. So, I mean, this is going to be the same thing with other communities as well. We might not always personally agree with what they say, but, well, this is how the community processes work.
Milton, back to you.
Yes, so again, it's not that we're trying to overturn or even challenge the decision of the community, the operational community in this case. What we're trying to do is say your proposal has to be coherent and complete, and people are having trouble understanding the completeness of a proposal that says may instead of will, a proposal that does not tell us what the jurisdiction of this MOU is, that makes it unclear how in a dispute these things would change. It's not entirely clear how these acknowledgments that were put into the proposal, which are good, when is that going to happen? It's those kinds of things that we're concerned
with. So if I can quickly respond to that as well. So the main thing, And I'm speaking for myself as one of the IOC members who has gotten now this feedback from the working group and many other people about what we should do. I think my position, at least, is that it would be really, really good if we had those two provisions listed in the document. I think we can live even without them in an emergency situation. And that's part of the reason, for me at least, for supporting the May language. I'm going ahead with the intent of negotiating those things rather than leaving them out. You all can think about some scenarios where we might not have an opportunity to make all the agreements that we like. I think the ITF is currently in a position where we can, you know, reasonably well claim that we have transitioned. There are some additional things that we would like to do, but we are already there, and I don't want to move from that position.
Milton?
Well, that raises an intriguing possibility then, in the sense that if we agree that the NTIA currently has no real authority or stewardship over the IETF, could the IETF part of the transition move forward on a different independent schedule? In effect, why do we need the permission of the NTIA to put into the place these new arrangements? And I guess Russ has never really answered my question as to why you didn't want to open up 2860.
So first, why did we not want to open up 2860 is we could not imagine a negotiation that would give us a stronger position that exists in 2860. We can only think of it being the ITF ending up in a less powerful position. I can tell you that that is the reason that the charter actually pushed that off limits. With regard to your other statement, the IAB wrote to NTIA several years ago and asked that in a future version of the contract that the protocol parameters not be included. And so really the only party who has a concern there is ICANN.
So I have myself, Russ, Mandy, Cavus, Alyssa, and Manal on the queue. So let's start with myself, and let me ask, I have two questions. I do hear, and given my involvement in the IETF historically, I do believe that I'm pretty well informed into how the IETF process works. And I think I understand the proposal that is laid forward by the protocol parameters operation community. But I still have a question regarding the actual actions that IANA function is taking regarding certain sort of requests for the protocol parameters. At the moment, in the contract between ICANN and Department of Commerce, there are several very, very detailed state diagrams and steps that the IANA function is taking, depending on what kind of parameter it is, whether it is an appointed expert assignment, whether it is an appeals process, and various other kind of things. Those very detailed state diagrams are things that, as far as I remember, is not included in the MOU and also not in this proposal from the protocol parameters community. So which means that that sort of promise from ICANN or the IANA functions operator to actually do things in a specific manner might actually go away. Is that something that was discussed, whether it's something that you feel should still exist somewhere, or is it something that you feel comfortable just with the current audit process is something that is stable enough? Thank you.
Yeah. So I believe the documentation that we have is stable enough for the system to run as it has been running. I do also want to note that there are some things in the contract between NTIA and ICANN that talk about, you know, what the NTIA could potentially do, even with protocol parameter requests, like review them. And I just wanted to be clear that the ITF has no part in such an agreement, and we do not consider it appropriate for the NTIA to engage in such activities, such as deciding whether a particular protocol parameter should be allocated or not. It's an ITF decision. So some of that contract language just simply drops out.
Elise, yes.
I just want to factually say that those processes that are in the response to the contract are processes that were developed with the IATF and are in accordance with their guidance to us. And they're in the contract because there was a request in the contract to document what our processes and procedures are. Those processes and procedures were not made up by the IANA department independently or ICANN independently. They were in conjunction with the IATF and have always been under the MOU and the annual supplemental agreement that we have in place. So it's not an NTIA-driven thing. It was an IATF-IAB-driven set of processes based on their policies and the IANA considerations in the RFCs.
Thank you for the clarification. And my second question, second thing I would like to bring up is that I hear from Daniel, you suggest that we should thank this operation community for the proposal they sent in. I also hear from Milton that we have some questions to ask. I think, not speaking as the co-chair of ICG, but just as a member of ICG, I think that if it looks like if we are going to thank the communities or send some kind of questions, I think that we need to remind ourselves that a review over completeness of the proposals, of all the three proposals together, at that point in time, we in ICG, I think, might discover some gaps, which means that we at that point in time might have to go back to these communities. So just because we are thanking them for the proposal they are sent in now doesn't mean that we might not come back to them later. That's at least what I think.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly respond that we are, of course, not negative in any way to discussion about, you know, what the next steps are and questions. We are very happy to answer questions. And it's very clear that there are next steps in both in terms of how we proceed just from our own perspective as well as how do the different pieces fit together and if we discover gaps. So we're very happy to revise and add and change it if needed. Again, hopefully not overriding community consensus.
Russ Mundy.
Thank you, Patrick. Russ Mundy for the record. One of the things I'd like to remind folks is there are a couple of relevant ESSAC publications to this discussion that the ESSAC worked quite hard at putting together and getting published. There's actually three ESSAC 67, ESSAC 68, and ESSAC 69. 68 and 69 are particularly relevant to this discussion, I think, because it gives at least a perspective on, first in 68, what is the contractual relationship between NTIA and the IETF, and essentially there isn't one, was our conclusion. There are pieces and steps and information, lots of details within the ICANN response, which is part of the NTIA contract. And as Elise just pointed out, these were developed jointly between the IANA functions activity and the IETF. But though it's in the contract, there's nothing that in any way in ties this to the IETF. So we have a very unusual relationship, I think. As the lead author of this document in 68, I spent a fair bit of time trying to figure out how that information got in the contract to begin with. Because as the other Russ points out, it's been asked to come out in the future. Well, honestly, I have to say I was not able to identify any publicly available information that says why it was in there in the first place. I did get some private information, but I'm not able to share that. But it's sort of a fact of life that it's in the contract, but it's not really binding for the IETF and how it works. Now, I think it was Milton that asked earlier, why are we even looking or bothering? Well, because it was in the NTIA letter that came out. You said you have to include the IETF in this review. So I think that's a simple explanation to that question. So if anybody does want pointers or further details offline relative to the ESSAC documents, I'm happy to provide those, as Patrick can also.
Thank you. Cavus?
Thank you, Patrick. Cavus is speaking. First of all, there is no problem that we verbally thank. But thank does not mean that we agree. Thank is thanks. That's all. Thank you very much for the work you have done. We are examining that. That's all. Number two, once again, we should not rush and put a rubber stamp. We are happy, finished, go away. Now, I come to the main point. Patrick, as a co-chair of the ICG or vice chair, it seems from the discussions that there is some legal gap between the work that we are doing. On the one hand, our charter mentioned that the transition requires the activities of the three communities be considered. And now we come to the point that one community has nothing to do with transition at all. So why it is in our charter? Our charter is wrong. Why we ask them to do something if they have nothing to do with the transitions? So we have to come up with this situation. Second, there are something we don't know. They are in the contract. They have not been implemented. They may be requested to be taken out. These are the gaps. There is nothing about the community to be empowered to make any redress or any decisions. Community is the collective words. There is a legal entity. It's not a physical entity. We don't know how that it works. There is no modality for that. Therefore, there are legal, procedural, and other issues, including accountability, which is not clear with respect to the activities of IETF, and we do not separate that, and we could not put any rubber stamp that this is saying that it is done. Thank you.
Yeah, so again, coming back to the question of why are we in this table to begin with, I think you can view this in two ways. You know, one is that the IETF is kind of far along the way already, and we don't have much to do. That doesn't mean that we don't care about the rest of you, and we want to be in the same boat. We also have things that we would like to achieve beyond what we have today, right? So we have a motive to do more and want to be a part of the transition. So that's the rationale. And for the second part of the question, I'm entirely sure how to respond, but of course, when we talk about community organizations, it doesn't mean that it's only the community, you know, individual members and, you know, having lots of different opinions. There's usually some amount of structure. Like in the case of IETF, we have the steering group that ultimately decides what our, you know, position is with regards to any particular documented issue. We also have specific entities or boards to deal with specific issues. We have the Internet Architecture Board that has some tasks and has a charter. We have the IAOC, which we discussed. And we have a legal model which has ISOC as our ultimate legal entity. So I don't think it's right to say that there's no
community. And of course, the community's opinion needs to be interpreted, and this is how the community organizations all work. That you know, ultimately, someone has to make a decision that this is what the community said, and then that gets implemented.
Alyssa?
Thanks. So I wanted to speak to a couple of points that have been raised. The first is this notion of rubber stamping. I don't really think anyone was suggesting a rubber stamp in particular because multiple people have taken a lot of time to review the process and determine what they think. And I do think it's conceivable that these communities, deliver what we asked for in the RFP. And just because we don't go back to them with questions doesn't mean we are rubber stamping what they did. which is also not an argument that says we shouldn't ask them questions if we have them. But I'm just saying that we should be open to the possibility that, perhaps not in this case, but maybe for the other communities or maybe for the IGF, that they meet all the requirements on the first try. We do our due diligence. We do a review. Not asking them questions doesn't mean that we are rubber stamping what they did. To the second point about, why are we reviewing a proposal about protocol parameters at all, I would say, if the NTIA would like to remove protocol parameters from their contract right now, then we could stop. But as it is, as it stands, there are provisions in the contract, as Russ has talked about, that relate to protocol parameters. And given that the contract is meant to go away, I think we, therefore, that is the reason why we are situation, because it's part of the NTIA contract, not because of anything related to 2860. And then lastly, I was wondering if, at least from my perspective, it would be helpful for if Milton or anyone else, if you could maybe articulate the specific questions that you think should get asked back to the community. I know we've talked about them conceptually, and there's some text in the assessment about them, but they're not really specifically phrased as, what would the question be? And I think for me, that would be helpful to understand, what is the specific question that you want to ask back, because then we can have a little bit more of a focused discussion about, whether we need to ask those questions or not. And I will just say, just to give an example of why I think having that discussion would be helpful, Milton and I have had a bit of back and forth in the Adobe room about the question about jurisdiction of the MOU. He asked what is the jurisdiction, and I responded with text from the proposal, which is that the agreement does not specify a jurisdiction. And his question back to me was whether we can fill this gap. And from the reason why I think, so if that's the question that we want to ask back to the community, or, understanding what is the question we want to ask back to the community really matters here, because in the community, in the IETF, the question of jurisdiction was discussed at some length, right? And in the RFP, we did not specify that whatever the accountability mechanisms are need to have a particular jurisdiction. And I wasn't expecting necessarily that, if we don't get three proposals back that say the jurisdiction is Switzerland, or the jurisdiction is China, or it's global, or it's the United States, that we would... we don't have a particular bar that we were looking for necessarily. And so to understand whether a question back to the community is a very specific question that has already been, dealt with in the community and that they have delivered a consensus answer to us about, it would help to understand what is the question. On the question of jurisdiction in particular, I don't think we will get a different answer if we ask the same question again. That's why I think it's helpful to kind of hone in on what the specific questions are. Thanks.
Manal?
Thank you, Patrick. Actually, I'm not going to ask a specific question on the protocol proposal per se, but rather on a more global level and asking us as an ICG working group, how do we see the final deliverable? I mean, is it going to be like three separate proposals, or is it going to be one unified proposal? And just because this would affect my personal assessment to whatever is being proposed. And let me use one example, the jurisdiction. If one proposal has a concrete jurisdiction while two other or one other doesn't, how would this be reflected in the final proposal? Are we going to put one jurisdiction for all and impose it on all, or three different separate proposals? Am I able to make my point clearly? Or
yes, I understand your question. Let me. I'm open to hear what other people are saying after we have gone through around the room. What I have heard so far as co-chair here in the group is that when we do have conflicting or different responses from the various communities, we are to encourage the communities to talk to each other and resolve the issues and come back to us. So from my perspective, that this has been one of the cases when we have to ask the communities questions or encourage them to discuss. Manal?
Sorry, just very quickly. Then I think despite the fact that we had not received the names proposal yet, but again, I think they are already getting into very, very specific details. So at least it's obvious now that there is discrepancy between the level of details going through the names proposal and the other two proposals. So again, is there something that we can start doing in that respect during this period of time to for the ICG, like advise them to talk together or whatever? Thank you.
Yari?
Yeah, so I think we discussed this previously. The key issue is where are the discrepancies? Not everything is the same. So we need to have a synchronization where synchronization is needed. Like if the ITF and the numbers community don't agree on who handles special purpose addresses, then that's a big problem. If the different communities handle some other things differently, that may not be a problem. And I'd probably classify your jurisdiction and accountability under those. As long as those are achieved in a satisfactory manner, then I think we don't have an issue. And you know, just to give you a silly example, we're not aligning policy processes between the different organizations. Although I would really like to charge as much money for port numbers as some people charge for TLDs. But
Manal.
Thank you, Yari. I'm just seeking clarification to understand how things would go forward. So if the names community come, for example, with a specific jurisdiction, does this mean that you're going to adopt this normally or you're going to work differently?
I think in that case we would work differently, and you know, in a very technical level or practical level, if you look at the proposals, I think we will have, you know, they have to be explained, you know, like in a different section, and there will be some overlap, some interaction points that we probably have to highlight in our own part of the proposal that actually goes to the NTIA, but we don't have to align every single piece of it.
Thank you. I have Daniel, Joseph, Wolf, Ulrich, Cavus, Russ, Mandy, and Milton. So, Daniel.
I'd like to motivate a little bit my earlier formal proposal to thank the protocol parameters community for their input to us and ask no further questions. My motivation was exactly the one that Alyssa gave just two turns ago, we should focus on the formal communication we, the ICG, want to have with the protocol parameter community at this stage. That doesn't preclude that at a later stage, when we have received the names proposal, we might not have additional questions. The important thing right now is to focus on what more do we need to know to do our work at this stage. And I very, very much support Alyssa's suggestion to focus exactly on that. So if people who are taking turns after me would focus on, let's ask this specific question, that would help us quite a lot.
Joseph?
Thank you, Joseph Aladev. I just wanted to highlight that there was at one point the question of, well, if the protocol parameters were taken out of the IETF contract, we wouldn't need to have that discussion at all. And I think the conversation between Yari and Manal indicates that, yes, we still need to have that discussion, because what we're looking at is an ecosystem of obligations. And some of them go directly to NTIA, but some of them deal with the interdependencies of the operational communities. And while I take it full face value that NTIA is not the issue for protocol parameters, the interaction with the others and how that works may be something that we have to consider in the final proposal. So I think there's room for that. To Daniel's point, we don't have a specific question at the time, but we do think that that interaction among the three operational communities is important when we get to assembling the final proposal.
Wolf Ulrich.
Thanks. Well, a couple of comments. The question well you raised, Manal, is very, very good. And we have to talk about that. And as well, I was also thinking why we are dealing with the protocol parameters right now, when it seems to turn out that they may be independent of the other communities and with regards to their IANA relations. And one thing I've perceived through the discussions and on the mailing list as well and from the proposal is that the IETF community is basically satisfied with the status quo. So that's what comes out of this. And the question is, why should they change, or why, under which conditions, they are triggered, maybe triggered, to change that, and even come to the idea to separate their part from the existing situation within a combined situation for the IANA services. So that's what I would like to ask. The first question is then, what could be a trigger for you to say, okay, we step away from that combined approach towards a combined solution of the transition? That is my first question. I have the other question on concern. I would join the concern of the open question of the with regards to the jurisdiction as well. I was asking myself, if you proceed with an MOU, what does it mean with regards to the jurisdiction? And in addition, I also would like to say, well, to join that we have to thank the IETF. But we have, in addition, also to communicate some message which is motivating them. Not just to thank, okay, thank you, we have received your proposal and we are thinking about that, but to give a kind of signal, and we have to think about that, which tells them we take it seriously and which tell them and give them an idea of what is to be done with that in the near future. Thank you.
Thank you. Caboose? Sorry, Yari. Yari first.
Yeah, it's just to answer on the trigger question. I mean, just to clarify our position, the IETF, you know, is a willing participant in this system of changes that we're going through, or this transition process, and we recognize our interdependency with the other parties, and we want to make sure that you know everything is well specified and that we actually identify any gaps if we see them. So, I mean, that's the reason why we are here. And I think the IETF doesn't want to, the community does not want to make huge changes. I mean, the changes are really very, very minor. If you look at the whole picture, I don't think we should try to engage them to, you know, please make a bigger change, because we need a bigger change. I mean, if it works, don't break it.
Caboose?
Yes, thank you. Caboose speaking. Yes, Yari, you mentioned that there is no role of the NTIA. That maybe, I am not sure. Nevertheless, since and the IETF or parameter protocol working with the two others, there is a relation. Therefore, I strongly not in favor to treat each proposal separately. We have to have an overall picture of everything when we send the report of the ICG or conclusion or outcome of ICG to NTIA. It would not be appropriate to say that we have no problem with this, but we have problem with the others. That is number one. Number two, there are legal and jurisdictional problems. Memorandum of understanding is memorandum of understanding, has no legal status. It's like declarations. Sometimes some declaration is universal. They have some customary law, but they do not have covenant law. They are not treaty. Letter of intent does not have any value, legal value. So we have to see the legal aspect of that. Apart from that, there is a degree of accountability, even if it is not detected or rectified by IETF. There is a degree of accountability which should be included, and it should be put into the overall accountability of the entire system, and that has not yet been addressed. The review and redress and the appeal panels, which applies to all three operating communities, also an issue to be discussed. Therefore, we could take the proposal, further study that and come up, but we would not separately discuss them and send them to NTIA and saying that this is the area that we don't have problem. We should have problem or not problem, common or not common, on overall aspect of all three issues. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just trying to respond at least parts of that. The legal value of MOUs and such. I think it's important that we do not engage in amateur lawyering in this room or elsewhere either. I think we do have to look at these things, but it's not necessarily as trivial as we might think. Normally, when you run a company or any kind of organization, you do want to ask the opinion of the lawyers, but you don't necessarily want to have them run the show. Either you have to assess the risks and the situations. In this particular case, it's a very difficult situation to have absolute guarantees of anything, whether they are jurisdiction residing in Finland or somewhere else, whatever the legal contract format is, because we have a situation where willing partners are engaging in, they have decided that they work together, and there's an ability for those partners to say, no, we don't want to work with you anymore. You can't make people to do more than that. And so I think that's one aspect. The other aspect is, we at the IETF believe that our value in the system doesn't come through the contracts or courts forcing someone to enforce anything particular. It comes from the value of implementers and other people in the world recognizing IETF as the entity that knows about stuff like port numbers and who decides about these things. So I think that's the ultimate protection that we have for any future thing. And if we lose that trust to the world, then you know we have no role. But I think that's a better protection than the contracts are. So I mean that's the rationale for why the working group believed what it believed, or the IETF community. And then accountability, I think that's very clearly explained in the document, actually in a very detailed manner. And it's a system that runs and has run. We have some running code about this. So I think that's far more that can be said of some other systems.
Russ Mundy.
Thank you, Patrick. We have, I think, a number of questions that we don't know and can't know the answer to until all three of the operational communities have submitted their information. My personal view on the jurisdictional issue, which is something that has been raised several times today, is that there is no reason why the jurisdictional issue would have to be the same for all three communities. What we've been asked to provide to the NTIA is an integrated proposal. If there's no conflicts and no gaps, and all three jurisdictions are separate, distinct, but they all make sense for their communities, then so be it. That's the Russ Mundy view at this point. There may be several other questions of this nature, but unless there are things that we see right now with the two proposals that we have in hand, I'm falling very heavily on the statements that Daniel had made earlier, maybe not quite to the extent that he made them, but very similar, very close to that. And that could be because I've dealt with both communities for a number of years, and so I may be more comfortable with what's said than other people. But again, I want to urge people to look at SAC 69 this time, which has a number of questions in it. And hopefully they are sensible questions, and people should think about those as they do their reviews, and it might stimulate a more hopefully focused discussion. Thank you.
Milton?
Yeah, so that's good. Just to immediately follow up on what Russ said, I want links to 68 and 69, if you can provide them. I've been searching for them unsuccessfully using search engines. So I would appreciate if you could email a link to those lists, to those reports.
I'll be happy to put all three in our Dropbox location.
That's also good. Fine. And I think that's the kind of detail that I'm looking for. What I want to do now is clarify what exactly those of us who are questioning the assessment or the proposal, what we're after, okay? Because I think there's this tendency, maybe on the part of Daniel, or to think that this is some kind of challenge to the autonomy of the IETF to make a decision, and that's not what it's really about. What we're concerned about is the stability and solidity of the change in an overall basis. This is a fairly unique thing. The U.S. government has been wrapped up with these coordinating functions since their inception, and we're trying to disentangle them. It's very controversial in the U.S. When you mention, you know, here you say the global multi-stakeholder community, we all know what you mean, we're all very happy with that. If you say that in front of a Republican congressman or even a Democratic congressman, you sound like you're some religious fanatic talking nonsense sometimes, okay? So we're asking you questions about how do you operationalize jurisdiction? What happens when a dispute happens? How do you know the U.S. government is really out of this? Because that has to be, we have to be confident about the final proposal, okay? So it's not appropriate to respond by saying, we love the IETF, they have a great process, we're just going to accept it. We want to know that the final proposal that comes out of this is something that will work institutionally. It's about establishing a sustainable, long-term institutional framework for the governance of the IANA functions. And like I say, we're nibbling around the edges of your final proposal, just those little parts of it that aren't clear to some of us. And I think that's just how we need to deal with this. We just need to make absolutely sure that this is, in fact, operational.
Thank you very much. Any comment on that? Yeah, Daniel?
Since I was mentioned, I did say nothing of what Milton just put in my mouth. The only thing I said is, let's concentrate on the questions the ICG wants to ask of the protocol parameters community. That's all I said. I didn't say anything about autonomy or about love, about legitimacy or whatever. That's all I said. And I said, I personally have no questions. I think the proposal is good. I think the process was followed. And I answered specifically to Jean-Jacques, yes, it may sound strange to some of us, but to those who are familiar with the IETF, it's perfectly clear and not strange. So that's my position. I have not heard anyone so far proposing a concrete question to the IETF. Can we please get to that?
So we are actually, in fact, we happen to be at the point in time when we should move into that portion of this session, because I don't have anyone on the list anymore, so I think we have gone around the table. Okay, Narelle.
Just in response, sorry, Narelle Clark for the record, just in response to Daniel's comment there, I did actually hear one concrete question that should go back to the IETF, and that is, in what jurisdiction do you think the MOU operates? And I personally do think that is answered within the context of the IETF submission to the ICG. It is somewhat indirect, however, because it does point you off to a bunch of other documents. And I think that was the comment I made when we got the proposal as a draft about a month and a half ago. So I leave it to you.
Yari and then Kavus. Yari?
Yeah, so the questions, I think it's important that we sort of try to separate, like, you know, if there's any disagreement about, you know, what the response is, as opposed to having an actual question or requesting for more information. I think it's quite natural that we ask for more information, and because as I've tried to say multiple times, there are further steps here in this room and back at the IETF. Some of the things that I've promised that we are working on, and we are, one is the sort of more generally usable explanation of how the process went through and, you know, why the decisions were what they were and what happened. I think that's going to be a useful thing for us to employ going forward. I've explained the IOC process. Hopefully you found that useful. Narelle, I believe we have provided an answer on the jurisdiction. Maybe the case that not everyone likes the answer, but that's a different statement than not having an answer. And I guess I'm still waiting for other things, but the point is that there are this ongoing processes. So yes, we will be making more clear in the future what the contracts actually will be. We will provide more explanation that's generally usable outside this room. I mean, you all are experts, but not everyone outside is. And I'd be happy to provide more information on other things as well. I don't want to go into a process where the ICG disagrees with something that we've done in the community, because that would be a difficult arrangement to have.
Kavus?
Yes, Kavus is speaking. I just want to clear, perhaps I was not clear. I raised three distinct questions. The problem is that IETF believes that community is IETF community. In my view, community is multi-stake global community, but not only IETF. So we need to know how the multi-stakeholder global community would have the empowerment to come in when it is necessary. Currently, this is a legal entity. It should come to some sort of the practicality and some sort of the operational. That means putting in a modality form. That is not clear. It is discussed in other area, but not in IETF. This is one question. And second, the accountability and the review and redress. I raised the question that because IETF is working with the two others, they need to have this accountability and this redress and so on together in an integrated manner with the others. It is not the case that IETF working entirely separately. It is working with respect to the needs of the two others and two others respect to the need of the IETF. They are together working. They are not a separation. These are three questions yet to be answered. Thank you.
Alyssa?
Thanks. So I completely agree with the move to ask specific questions, even just in Kavus's most recent articulation. I'm not sure that I know what the question is that we want to be putting back to the IETF. So maybe phrasing them as questions would help. I would also say, again, and this is like to Narelle's point, useful to discuss the actual questions, because I think it's very important that we not ask the same question that we already asked in the RFP. So just to take the example of jurisdiction, we need to ask a different question than what we already asked if we expect to get a different answer. It might be a more refined question, whatever it might be. But if we ask the same question again, I expect that we will get the same answer. I also wanted to respond to a couple of other points that have come up. Milton was talking about, you know, the strength of the proposal, and I'm not sure that I fully heard everything that he said or understood, but I don't think, you know, the bar has been set such that the objective of the ICG is to somehow accommodate the whim of every member of Congress who might be interested in this topic. I think we have criteria that the proposal needs to meet. Those criteria from NTIA, and that is the goal and the objective. That's what we have to do. We have to deliver a proposal that meets those criteria. And I think we need to ask ourselves as we go through this process if we are meeting that standard or not, and not some other standard that hasn't been articulated or that someone might be able to dream up or that might exist in the minds of a policymaker somewhere. I think we have criteria and we know what they are. And lastly, I just wanted to emphasize something that Yari said, and that I think those of us who are familiar with the IETF community are trying to express, but we spent a lot of time in the IETF process itself discussing, which is the root of the authority of the protocol parameters. And I think the reason why you see the response as it is and why it's a little bit difficult to understand, if you don't have a fully executed, contract with a very, specific U.S. state jurisdiction identified and the signatures of 15 lawyers on it, why the IETF community and the people who are involved in the process still feel confident in the proposal, it might be hard to understand that if the internet protocol engineering context is not your home and you're the one that you're familiar with. But it's really important from the engineering perspective to realize that the authority of the protocol parameters comes from the decision of implementers of internet technology and internet protocols to them. That's where the authority comes from. It doesn't come from a contract or an MOU or a database that's printed on a website. And that's why I think there's a little bit of an impedance mismatch when we talk about these things, because from an engineer's perspective, that's really the root of the authority. All of the other protections are very good and useful, and we're glad that we have them. But the root of the authority comes from the decision of people to use the protocol parameters and to use a particular parameter. And if they decide to use a different parameter that isn't specified by IANA and the critical mass go that way, that's where the authority will lie in that new place. So those are my 3 points. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I see comments on the in the chat room here from Milton regarding questions, suggesting that we do not have to formulate the questions here on the fly, that we can vet that on the list, if I understand things correctly. What I think is important, though, is that we in the ICG is working efficiently, and that we are not dragging on for some time now when the operation community, when the protocol parameters have come with something to us, that we should also respond promptly. So as long as it doesn't extend the time it takes for us to respond, I think that is a fine suggestion. Of course, because it's also very important that we ask the right questions and that we agree on what they are. So I don't have anyone else on the list. Okay, yes, Michael, please.
I'm not quite sure, Michael Niebel, whether this is a question, but I just want to like to reiterate and have a confirmation. Although we have now discussed that there's no connection between an ITF and necessary an NTIA, in your contribution you say that you you make the connection yourself with the contract. And it is the question of the transition in case you want to change from ICANN to somebody else. And I just wanted to know whether my impression is correct, that the formulation, it is the preference of the ITF community that as part of the NTI and transition, ICANN acknowledges that it will carry out the obligations established under C73 and 161 of the current IANA functions contract between ICANN and the NTIA to achieve a smooth transition to subsequent operators should the need arise. My question is there, again, confirmation. You have said we don't want to change. Such an obligation is not part of the current MOU. Therefore, it is a very light thing. And when you say it is the preference of the ITF community, I would like to know whether you're convinced that such a light declaration is sufficient to satisfy the need for stability and continuity.
So I can tell you that the IOC has taken that preference from the community and put forward some draft language, sent that to ICANN. It is currently under legal review with ICANN to see if it will be added to the SLA that will be signed in the next few weeks.
Thank you very much. Let me suggest that given that there are no more people on the speaker list, that we ask everyone to think about questions. We try to work on the list and online and also talk with each other and come back to the topic tomorrow and see what the status is regarding questions, and break early for lunch, because the lunch is already in the room, so we break we move the lunch to now 12:30 and still have lunch for 1 hour. So with this, let's reconvene at 1:30. Thank you.